live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So Jimmy Butler comes back to practice. He returns to practice. And normally when an NBA player returns to NBA practice, that's not that big of a deal. Let's be honest. It's even less of a deal when it's the Minnesota T-Wolves. However, few NBA players have returned to an NBA practice the way Jimmy Butler did yesterday. You see, it turns out getting back on the court with his teammates for the first time since April was a thing. And since we're talking about Jimmy Butler, you knew it would be, right? He's not happy there. And on the off chance that anybody there forgot that he's not happy there, he made sure to remind everybody of it. My man Woj reported that Butler was, quote, vociferous and intense throughout the scrimmages, targeting president of basketball operations and coach Tom Thibodeau, GM Scott Layden, and teammates, including Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, league sources said, end quote. Targeting the GM. That seems a little aggressive, but it's actually even better than that. According to Woj's sources, Butler yelled to Layden, quote, "You effing need me, Scott. You can't win without me," end quote. Man, I love Jimmy Butler. That is so tight. This dude stays away from the team. He demands a trade, and then when he finally does show up, he F-bombs the GM in front of everybody, lights him up, and says, "You can't win without me. Trade me, damn it. You can't win without me." Hey, Jim, which one is it? Trade me, damn it, or you can't win without me? Obviously, Jimmy Butler thinks it's both. Like, you can't win without me. Now get me the hell out of here. And that's not all. Chris Haynes from Yahoo has this, quote, "Screaming from the top of his lungs, Butler uttered taunts at his teammates, including, 'They ain't bleep. They soft,' league sources said. Most of the players knew the invectives were directed at Towns and Wiggins," sources said. I don't know. You drop those kind of invectives on those two dudes, they're not getting up. If you're a T-Wolves fan, you might actually try and convince yourself that this is a good thing. You might be thinking, this is exactly what this team needs. Butler to come to work, kick some ass, challenge some guys, get everybody on the same page. You might think that, but you'd be wrong. Let me tell you something. This guy didn't show up and F-bomb everybody in that building to improve the team. He did it to prove a point. He did it to get himself traded. And he, Butler, and four scrubs beating the starters, and Butler and four scrubs beating the second unit, that's not a good thing either. That tells you more about the first and second teams than it does Butler. In other words, there's no positive in that. It tells you the starters and the second unit aren't very good, or they aren't trying, or both. Either way, it's all bad, and Butler does not want any part of that. At one point, it got really personal. According to Yahoo, at one point, Butler found himself guarding Towns in the post. Quote, "After Towns received the entry pass, Butler yelled, 'He can't do bleep against me.' Towns ended up passing the ball out," sources said. Again, that's not a vet trying to motivate a young player. That's not Mike or Kobe or LeBron coaching up one of the youngins. That's your alpha disrespecting one of your best young players, punking him. Another example of how jacked their chemistry is. Listen, I understand why they did what they did. I understand why they brought him in. It's a mistake. It didn't work. They need to admit it. They need to move on. Instead, the T-Wolves are just butchering it. I mean, the guy's got trade value. But the longer they keep this guy around, the worse it's going to get, the more unlikely it is they're going to get anything fair in return. Because by now, it's pretty clear. And it should have been clear to the T-Wolves sooner. This guy can't stay. He doesn't want to be there. Everybody in the NBA knows it. And if they're not going to trade him, and he's going down, he's taking a few with him. Check out the conversation Butler had when he came off the floor and sat down with Rachel Nichols yesterday.
I'm just going to read a little bit of Adrian Wojnarowski's report on what happened there, that you were loud, emotional, passionate, we like to say, targeting Coach Tom Thibodeau, teammates like Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, that you told GM Scott Layden, quote, "You effing need me." How would you describe what happened today?
A lot of it's true. A lot of it is true. But you got to think, I haven't played basketball in so long, and I'm so passionate, and I love the game, and I don't do it for any other reason except for to compete and go up against the best to try to prove that I can hang. So all my emotion came out at one time. Was it the right way to do it? No. But I can't control that when I'm out there competing. Like, that's my love of the game. That's raw me. Me at my finest, me at my purest. That's what you're gonna get inside the lines.
And I was gonna say, is it not the right way for it to come out? Do you think it was the wrong thing to do, or was it an okay thing to do?
I think that I was honest. Was I brutally honest? Yes. But I think that that's the problem. Everybody's so scared to be honest with one another.
That's good. That's good. I like Jimmy Butler. I really do. But him saying that everybody is so scared to be honest and sitting there with a straight face and saying, you know what that was? I've just been away for so long and it just all came out. My passion for the game. I'm just so competitive. That's not what that was. That's not what that was. But everybody needs to be honest. Everybody's so scared of being honest. Me, I just showed up after 3 weeks and, man, I love the game so much and it just all came out. No, again, that's not what that was. What that was him sending a message. What that was him saying, get me the hell out of here. What that was him saying, I'm back, but it's not all good. Don't confuse me being back with it being all good because it's busted. He told her as much, quote, it's not fixed. Let's be honest, end quote. Here's your bottom line. Butler is an intense player. He's intense in games. He's intense in practice. But yesterday was not about him not playing in a few weeks and then showing up and being so overcome with his passion for the game. It was about him making a point. Point being, if you don't deal me, get ready for a full year of this. Get ready for a full year of me eviscerating everybody in this building, including the two young wolves who have yet to respond well to it. Of course, they don't want to admit the mistake. They're trying to maintain as much leverage as they can. They're trying to convince everybody that it's actually a good thing. Check this out. My other favorite part of yesterday was the T-Wolves trying to convince people that it was a good day. Stan Van Gundy told ESPN he spoke to people in the T-Wolves organization and, quote, their main reaction was best practice they've had the entire preseason. That Jimmy being back energized people. It brought more intensity. End of quote. A guy warns you that he's going to be enraged if you don't trade him, and you don't trade him, and he shows up at practice, and he berates everybody, and he F-bombs the GM, and you consider that a good day. Hey, how about this? If it's such a good day, and it's the best practice ever, why did you cancel practice today? Which they did. You're starting to get the sense of where I'm going with this? They jacked it all up. Did you really think that you sitting here and telling everybody it was the best practice ever was going to juice up the Butler trade market? That's funny. You better get this guy out of here before he wrecks the careers of two of your best young players, because he does not want to be there. He does not want to be there. Jimmy Butler, man, that's some good theater now. I could do an entire show on what happened yesterday, and I wasn't even there. 1-800-636-8686. The only team that doesn't know that the Minnesota Timberwolves have to trade Jimmy Butler is the Minnesota Timberwolves. We are joined by Browns Corner, Denzel Ward. Denzel, great to have you on. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, man. I'm great. Listen, you had a huge game on Sunday with that pick, three passes defensed. You had a huge field goal block. How good did it feel to have a game that big and an overtime win against a very good Ravens team?
Yeah, it feels real good. I'm just here trying to just help this team win and make as many plays as I can, and I'm just glad overall that we got the win.
Hey, listen, you're making a lot of plays, and head coach Hugh Jackson said that he felt like you had the ability to get a field goal block against the Ravens, and you told him, quote, coach, I got you. So what did you see on the field goal?
Yeah, really, I was just keying the ball and just waiting for the snapper to snap it, and then I just got off the edge as fast as I could and got a hand on the ball.
Denzel Ward joining us. So the team wins a game on a Sunday for the first time in years, and you get it against a division opponent for the first time in years. There is so much buzz around that team right now that guys like Snoop are showing up. I mean, you tell me, take us inside. What's the vibe like at the facility these days?
Yeah, it's just a great vibe going on right now throughout the facility. We're just going out there with the main focus is the win, and we're just going to keep fighting throughout the whole game, whether we're down a score or two, like just keep fighting to the end of the game, whether that's in double overtime or whenever.
Denzel, you've been on the big stage before. You've made a lot of plays before. But when Snoop shows up, that's something different. In fact, what was it like when Snoop did show up?
It was exciting seeing him come out and support.
Thursday night is the perfect night to head to my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, they are the very best bet this season. They have been in business for years, they have great reviews online, and their mobile site is so easy to use. I would only recommend a service to you that I've been using myself. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to my bookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join right now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME and activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account, and you can claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid with MyBookie. Denzel Ward is my guest. You're part of a defense that is absolutely nasty, making plays all over the field. How would you describe the attitude and the mindset that that defense brings with it?
Yeah, just a nasty attitude. We just put an emphasis on takeaways, and we're just trying to take the ball away and make plays, make tackles, and help the team win, help our offense out.
Denzel, I can hear already by talking to you for a couple of minutes that you're not going to make it about you. That's not your deal. You just want to help out in any way you can. But some of your teammates, some of your veteran teammates are making it about you. Like Myles Garrett said, quote, he was everywhere. He had a game just like he did in the first game of the season where he was ball hawking and on top of guys at all times, end quote. Really serious praise from a really serious player. So what's it mean to you to have the kind of respect that you have from the vets already?
Yeah, it means a lot. Like I said, my main goal is to win games. So they brought me here to win, help them win games and make plays. So I feel that I'm a playmaker and I can do things like that. So how do you guys continue to go out and show that?
All right, so he's not the only one, though. Baker Mayfield has been hyping you. Hugh Jackson's been hyping you. J.R. Smith is tweeting that you're the rookie of the year already. I'm really curious. The first five games, man, you're making it look easy. I know it's not, but what have the first five games of your NFL career been like, and is it what you expected?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been fun getting to know these guys and playing with these guys. We're getting a real good bond throughout the team right now and good vibe. We just got to keep it going.
Denzel Ward is my guest. You're from Ohio, so what's it like to be doing all of this and be a part of this essentially in your hometown?
It's exciting. It's exciting. I didn't know where I was going to get drafted to before before I got drafted, but for it to be my hometown is just crazy.
You probably don't want to get ahead of yourself. I get that. But you're 2-2-1 right now. I could argue with a couple of breaks, a couple of plays. You guys are 5-0. So what's the upside here? Do you feel like this could be a playoff team this year?
Yeah, I definitely feel that way. I feel the vibe around the facility, everyone else feels that way as well. Well, we just got to continue to go out and show it.
Denzel, what about around the town? I mean, I want to be clear about this. I'm in Southern California, and that is an amazing football town, and this is a national show in scope. For people that have never been to Cleveland, don't understand Browns football, what does the team mean to the town, and how is the town responding to this particular team?
Yeah, it means a lot. The whole city, everybody's rallying together. You could just feel the energy on the sideline and the crowd, everybody when we're playing the game. So come to Cleveland, you're just going to feel it. It's just feel like a family here.
Browns cornerback Denzel Ward is my guest. Now I would imagine you may have had a perception of Baker Mayfield before the two of you became teammates, maybe going back to him planting that flag at the horseshoe. What did you make of him the day he did that, and what's he like as a teammate?
Hold on, say that last part again. What did I make of him when?
When he dropped that flag in the horseshoe when he played you guys in college.
Right, yeah.
What did you think of that?
I definitely had some words for him when we got drafted together, but we're on the same team now. I'm glad he's our quarterback. He's a great player. Everyone obviously sees that. He's a great quarterback, and just glad to have him on the team.
Hey, Denzel, I would imagine you did have words for him, and I would imagine Baker had a few words for you. Any way you can share that conversation? What'd you guys say to each other?
Say that again?
What did you guys say to each other when you had words for him? I know he had words for you. How did that conversation go?
Oh, it went fine. It went fine. It was all fun. But it was all fun. That's between me and him.
Fair enough. Respect. We're talking to Denzel Ward. Before you go, last month you had a really nice piece in the Players Tribune about your father, Paul Ward Jr. He passed away after your freshman year. What was he like as a person, and what kind of an impact did he have on you?
Man, he had a big impact on me. That was my role model and someone I had looked up to, just teaching me the little things, like to always look a man in his eyes and just a lot of things. He just taught me a lot, and that's how I kind of carry myself throughout life, just being humble but being confident as well.
You know, one of the messages also was he wanted to make sure that people know your name. When people think of you and your name, what do you want them to think of? That was important to him too.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's still being written right now, but really that's more so like when he said that before I go out and play, just make plays and just give a lot of good energy and do whatever you can just to help your team win and be a team player and just carry that throughout life. Work hard and do what you're supposed to do the right way.
It's Thursday. Are you looking for something to do this weekend? Check out my pals then at Vivid Seats. With Vivid Seats, a brand new sponsor here, you can attend the concert, the show, or sporting event of your choice and do so at a great price. Here's what I like about Vivid Seats. It is the top source for tickets for all the live events that you want to go to, and you can sort by price or look for the seats in the section and the row of your choice. And to make it even better, Vivid Seats is reaching out to you new customers and will give you a promo code, which will give you 10% off your first ticket order so you can save even more money. Here's what you do. You go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. First-time customers, make sure you use the promo code ROME and get 10% off your first Vivid Seats order. Every single purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Make sure you download that app and enter the promo code ROME and get 10% off your first order on Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Vivid Seats. This is a great company with an awesome proposition. Check it out yourself. Vivid Seats. Remember back in May when Lenny Dykstra had himself a Lenny Dykstra type night? A night that involved allegedly getting into an Uber, threatening the driver's life, getting cuffed with a grip of tree, blow, and ice on him. Talking about a trifecta. Tree, blow, and ice. Remember that night? Well, apparently a grand jury in Union County, New Jersey does. And they're coming down with the hammer because yesterday, Lenny D was formally indicted on three separate charges: possession of cocaine, possession of meth, and making terroristic threats. To quote Lenny himself back in May, quote, "just another day in the life of Lenny Dykstra," end quote. Yeah, I guess if getting arrested for threatening to kill an Uber driver is just another Wednesday, I guess so, Lenny. Except now your days could look a hell of a lot different, because TMZ is reporting that each one of those charges could carry a sentence of between 3 to 5 years in the slammer. And for what it's worth, and probably it's not worth anything at all, but Lenny has maintained his innocence since the moment he got fitted for the silver bracelets. And police body cam footage from that night back in May reveals a conversation in which Dykstra seems pretty confused as to why he was being placed under arrest.
Dude, take it easy, man.
Relax.
Mr. Dykstra, relax.
Why are you grabbing so hard?
Put your hands behind your back.
Wait, what are you doing?
Put your hands behind your back.
Wait, what are you doing?
You're being placed under arrest.
For what?
We'll explain everything in a minute, all right?
Oh my God, from an Uber driver? Dude, under arrest for what?
We're gonna explain everything to you in a minute. Just relax.
Oh my God, under arrest.
It didn't sound too good. Oh my God, under arrest. Lenny seems, Alvin, get ready to re-rack that. He seems utterly shocked that he's being fitted for silver bracelets and has no idea why. And he wonders if it's because of the Uber driver.
Dude, take it easy, man. Relax. Mr. Dykstra, relax.
Why are you grabbing so hard?
Wait, what are you doing? You're being placed under arrest.
For what?
We'll explain everything in a minute, all right?
Oh my God, from an Uber driver? Dude, under arrest for what?
We're gonna explain everything to you in a minute. Just relax.
Oh my God, under arrest.
Yeah, I'm no lawyer, and nor would I ever pretend to be one on the radio, but it would seem, Lenny, that you're under arrest because you're strapped with blow and ice, and an Uber driver literally drove to the police station to get immediate help after you threatened his life. Except Dykstra, to give him fair time, he says that's not how it is. He's on record as saying the Uber driver kidnapped him. Now, again, I've never kidnapped anybody before, but I'm pretty sure that if I did, and I won't. In fact, go ahead. You can put money on that. Go look for that at my bookie. See if there's any action there. Jim Rome, the over-under, will never kidnap anybody for the rest of his life. I'd bet that. Take that to the bank. But if I did, I'm pretty sure that I would not drive my victim to the cops if I was the one doing the kidnapping. And apparently the grand jury in Jersey felt the same way, because you normally do not get indicted on charges that serious unless they're pretty sure that they're going to get that conviction, that the evidence is there to support it. But of all the whack things in the story, maybe nothing is more whack than his lawyer telling TMZ Sports, quote, "A grand jury will indict a ham sandwich." I looked it up. To this day, a grand jury has never indicted a ham sandwich. And let me save you the joke so you don't have to kill yourself rushing to your phone to thumb out the tweet. That if a grand jury ever did indict a ham sandwich, Mama Cass would still be alive. Save your bullcrap where you remind me that she didn't choke out on a kale salad, Rome, did she? No, imbeciles, she didn't. But it's neither here nor there. And as always, I know exactly what you're thinking before you think it. I'm sure the grand jury, though, is going to love reading that quote from Lenny's lawyer, because I'm sure the grand jury really appreciates that kind of arrogance and flippancy that they're handling this situation with. This guy's over here looking at 15 years, and his hired gun is talking about ham sandwiches and saying that the evidence in this case overwhelmingly confirms that Lenny is innocent. At this point, I don't really know who's more out of touch. The guy with the meth and the coke and threatening the Uber driver, or the guy defending the guy with the meth and the coke threatening the Uber driver. Lenny, wake up. Wake up. Look in the mirror. The mirror is there for a reason, and it's not to blast rails off of. Look in the mirror. My man, you are bankrupt. Bankrupt morally, bankrupt financially. Look in the mirror. Take a long look in the mirror and own it once and for all. You've done some horrible things to a lot of people, including close family members and friends. Man, you got to salvage what's left of your life. Lenny, look in the mirror.
Dude, under arrest for what?
Dre Kirkpatrick is my guest. Dre, it's good to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
Good, good. So you beat the Dolphins on Sunday. Let me start right there. When you fell behind 17-0 in the second quarter, what was going through your head?
Just relax. I never felt like we was going to lose the game. Like I said, man, it's a different team, different mindset. We just kept fighting, man. We came out with the win.
You know, it's going to get to that a little bit later on, but why don't we go there right now? What's different about this team, and what's different about the mindset?
The chemistry and being able to bond with each other. You know, I feel like that's what's some of the things that we lacked in previous years. Just guys just getting together, shooting pool, bowling, going out to eat, having team dinners, team DB meetings, and going over film after on Fridays after everything's done, just asking questions with each other, bonding, man. And I feel like it's definitely paying off tremendous for us right now.
Dre Kirkpatrick, my guest. You know, I wonder, what comes first, the chemistry or the wins? Like, do you need chemistry to get the wins, or do you get chemistry after you win?
I feel like chemistry starts in OTAs and training camp. So you got to have chemistry to build an identity. And once you build your identity, that's when the wins start.
Right. So going back to that game, when you locked them down, I mean, you get a field goal in the second quarter and nobody panicked. But then you locked them down, you prevent them from scoring again, and then you rattle off 27 straight points, including two defensive touchdowns. I mean, you've had some nice wins this season, but how much pride is there in the way you won that game?
It's a lot of pride, you know. Like I said, man, I even told my dad, I was like, man, Dad, I don't even never remember the last time that we've been down by that many points and came back and won by almost two touchdowns. So it was great, man. It was just great to, just to see us where we're at right now and see how we rallying together and finishing games in the fourth quarter, because you look at last year, you know, we wasn't that good in the fourth quarter.
Hmm. We're talking to Drake Kirkpatrick. AJ Green made the point, quote, "Nobody gave us a chance when the season started. Why do they believe in us now? We're going to continue to keep playing and keep playing for each other," end quote. Does it sound right to you? Does that sound about right? And how much motivation did the guys get from the fact that nobody was giving you guys any credit or any hope this season?
Oh, yeah, it sounds about right. You know, he's definitely the one of the main leaders on his team. He's a vocal leader. A lot of people don't see him being vocal, but he's definitely a vocal leader. He's a guy that stands for something, and, you know, everybody rallies around him. But when, you know, the beginning of the season, man, nobody did not. They didn't really talk about us, didn't care about us. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that bring a lot of energy, like to talk a lot of junk at practice, get guys going. And my thing was just keep quiet. Don't worry about it. They're going to hear us in a minute, you know. So that was kind of my message to the team as we always went through OTAs, camp, and start of the season. And right now things is picking up. Like I told some of the guys, I was like, I've been in this situation before. I've been 8-0, 7-0, whatever, start of the season. You know, and guess what? At the end of the day, end of the year, we end up losing. And we did it all for – it was a good momentum shift, but at the end of the day, it was for nothing. So I just want guys to continue to put their hands on the pedal, man, and, you know, just stay focused and locked in, because we definitely starting something special around here right now.
Hey, listen, in an answer like that, it's pretty clear. You're a leader on that team. Guys are going to gravitate to you. Guys want to know what you know because you've been there. So when guys are looking to you for leadership, how do you approach that role as a leader?
I just be truthful with them. You know, I tell, like, for instance, young guys like Jesse Bates, you know, who's never been in this game or who's never experienced or even played in a game of this magnitude. Like I told him, I said, hey, bro, we're not doing, you know, we're not going to get overly motion. We're not going to, you know, just let the game come to you. You got us out here. We've been through it. You know, you got enough guys that done played in this situation before. Just play your game, man, because I feel like the kid is ball. I feel like he's having a Pro Bowl year. And, you know, that's some of the things I'm trying to tell these guys, man. We're not going to go into this game with the mindset of what they did last year or previous years, because at the end of the day, Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl last year.
You know, Trey, you guys are 4-1, but you've had some adversity. You've had some injury. John Ross is one of the guys who's dealing with an injury right now. He, of course, posted that legendary 4-2-2 at the Combine. You recently wrote about what it was like to line up against him in practice for the first time. What was your strategy going into that matchup?
Yeah, you know, with his speed, you know, it definitely is threatening you. You know, because at the end of the day, I didn't know nothing about him. I didn't know his releases. I didn't know a lot of things about him until I started repping him. And once the first rep, it was more like, get out of there, Dre. Just run. They's about to try to take the top off. So just get out of there and run straight to the end zone. And sure enough, they ran a fade ball.
How'd that go? How did that end?
I wasn't fast that day.
That's amazing. So as a DB, what concerns you more, a guy who's got that crazy, blazing fast speed or somebody who runs routes to perfection?
Well, I'm going to break it down, because you got to think, when he first came, we was in OTAs, you can't press. That's not my weakness. That's not what we do around here. We press corners. So, of course, you know, I'm like, shit, I already know he's so fast, so he got up on me. But when a guy's like that, you want to press a guy like him. So, you know, try to slow him down, make him study his feet. But I definitely feel like guys his style with his speed is some of the harder guys to cover.
Dre Kirkpatrick joining us, breaking it down for us. All right, so it's Steelers week, right? I mean, every single week in the NFL is big. Is Steelers week different than any other week, and how do you approach it?
Previous years it have, but like I said, man, no, not this year. You know, like I said, man, Philadelphia won last year. All the antics and adversity that we had built up last year is dead, because at the end of the day, the season is dead. It's a different approach this year. And like I keep telling people, man, like, they're not the team to beat. We're the team to beat right now, and that's the mindset that we have.
Dude, I was going to say to you, maybe it's not Steelers week. Maybe it's Bengals week. And the point is, you don't have to deal with them. They've got to deal with you. That's what
exactly.
I'm hearing.
And that's the mindset. That's totally 100% the mindset right now. Like, we're not sinking into behind those guys or, you know, have to play up to an expectation of to beat those guys. No, we going out there and we're going to play our game, man. We're going to be disciplined in it.
We're talking Bengals football. Dre Kirkpatrick joining me for a few more moments. So when you face Pittsburgh, that means, of course, you deal with Ben and you deal with Antonio Brown. You wrote about both these guys in the Players Tribune. Now, when I talk to linebackers and linemen about how tough it is to get Ben down, from a corner standpoint, what makes him so tough to defend?
Yeah, man, because when you look at film and when he's in trouble, those guys, they know how to get him open. They know how to, come back to the ball, or one guy may come back to the ball, the other guy may take off to the pylon. So it's very disciplined. This is a very eye disciplined weekend. You have to make sure you have your eyes on guys like Antonio, who likes to create new routes, and a guy that never gives up on the route, or whenever if he's running a comeback, it's not open. He's gonna turn it upfield. Man, Ben's gonna try to look up to hook up with him, man. But at the end of the day, you got to have great eye discipline this week.
Now, you said the thing about Antonio Brown, everything is frightening about his game except his speed. What is the scariest thing about AB?
His hands.
Yeah.
When the ball touches, he makes some of the craziest catches, and you got to be physical with him, man. You got to get hands on. You got to try to disrupt him at the line. And I feel like, the game plan that we have this week, I feel pretty good about it.
Last thought, you went viral earlier this season when you went to a retirement home and you had a tailgate party with some seniors. Man, it was awesome. What did you expect when you showed up there?
At the end of the day, I really didn't think it was going to be big as it was. I didn't expect that many people to be there, and their families. They brought all their families in and things like that. And the crazy thing, I almost didn't make it. I was sick that day. And, I was feeling bad, but I gave my word. I'm one of those guys, if I give my word, I'm going to stand up behind it. So I pushed through. We get there. We dancing and we having fun. And this lady just started dancing, like going crazy. And 95 years old, I was just so inspired by her. And when I went over, we started dancing and having fun. And when I left, I got home. I'm sitting on the couch watching TV trying to relax because it was before the Thursday night game. My phone just went crazy. And when I looked at it, I seen it was going viral. I was like, "Oh, let me post this too." Try to get my IG followers up.
Hey Dre, if that was a dance off, did she beat you?
Oh, 100%, man. I like I said, it was an inspiration, man, to see somebody that's 98 years old still able to move and still be able to enjoy life, man. And knowing what's going on too. So that was definitely a blessing.
She had some amazing moves. I think you're making this point before I let you go, but it seems to me, I'm not sure who was having more fun, her or you, and she looked like she was having a great time. The thinking always is, if you're a pro athlete and you go to a retirement home, you're going to do it to brighten their day, but how much did she brighten your day?
She brightened my day, man. Like I said, I recently, about 2 weeks ago, I recently went back and just sat down and talked to her. Asked her a few questions, just asked her how does she feel to be a superstar now, and she was like, "I don't like it. I want everybody to leave me alone." So I kind of got the personality of her, but she was great. She was great.
That's great. Leave me alone. Don't at me, man. Don't at me. Leave me alone. Cincinnati is 4-1. They are in first in the AFC North, and they've got the Steelers at home on Sunday. Dre Kirkpatrick, my guest. Dre, I appreciate you, man. I really appreciate your energy, and great to have you on the show. Really nice to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Anytime, man.
You have a great day. So the Lakers go up against Golden State last night, and they did so in Vegas. 123-113, Laker Nation. I've got one thing to say to y'all. Car flags up, baby. Car flags up. Because if seeing LeBron James in a Laker jersey is still weird, seeing LeBron James lead the Lakers to a win over Golden State is even more weird. The Dubs have a 7-game winning streak against the Purple and Gold. The Lakers have not beaten Golden State since November of 2016. Last night, LBJ and the meme team were out in force, and they were playing like the Larry O was on the line. Look, I'm not here to hype something that's not real. I know it's the preseason. I know it's the preseason. I'll say it a third time. I know it's the preseason. But the LeBronzo era getting started in Sin City was way more entertaining than a preseason NBA game is supposed to be, because the duo got nice. I mean, other than Zoe airballing that first jumper that he took from distance with nobody within 30 feet of him after an offseason of reports that he had fixed his J. But after that, he and the King got on the same page, and the chemistry was pretty smooth.
We think he might play in the second half. We don't know. Underneath, LeBron finds Lonzo.
Spectrum Sportsnet with that video, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network. I know it's the preseason. Oh, and if you think that I kind of rolled through that Rex call like it didn't happen, it's because it didn't happen. I know this is the preseason. I know the preseason does not mean anything to the Warriors. Hell, the regular season does not mean anything to the double champs. But the preseason does matter to the Lakers, especially in the West, and especially when they don't have a hell of a lot of time to figure things out and get this crazy cast of characters on the same page. I mean, you've got some pretty wacky personalities. You've got to get everybody on the same page. They don't have a lot of time, so the preseason does matter to LA. But if you're a Laker fan and you saw these guys getting out and running from the jump, you had to be pretty pumped. If you saw your squad essentially go toe-to-toe with the double champs when Steph, KD, and Klay all played pretty big minutes, you had to be dialing up the team shop and checking out your jersey. Your options anyway. And then when Bron did this heading into halftime.
JaVale sees it. LeBron gonna fire it up. It'll count if it goes! And it goes! A three to end the half for LBJ!
I mean, dude styled that like it was game seven. Looking around like, how you like me now? You see what I just did? Yeah, Bron, it's a preseason game. We all saw it. Doesn't matter. Not in this town. Car flags. Car flags all across SoCal. Unite. Look, there's still a hell of a lot we got to wait on. Still a lot to figure out about this team. How are Zoe and Rondo going to split time? What about Brandon Ingram? What's this all do to his development? How will he develop? What is Luke's rotation going to look like? How can the solar system not cave in on itself when JaVale, Mike Beasley, and Lance Stephenson are all on the same roster? But these are all questions for another day because the Lakers just beat the Warriors. Preseason or not, that is enough to get the car flags out. That's enough to get Laker Nation hyped. I'm not going to throw a wet blanket on it. Go ahead. Get hyped. And when you get hyped, Troy Nicholas takes his shirt off. Luke Fickell is my guest. Luke, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Thanks, man. You guys did some homework there.
Dude, I am prepared. Luke, I am prepared. I'm happy to talk to you, too. Listen, you're coming off a win over Tulane, 37-21. You're 6-0. You are bowl eligible. You're ranked in the top 25. First things first, how are things at the University of Cincinnati for you right now?
They're good. I guess there's a buzz. And, you know, we're just trying to catch up to what basketball has. And so, you know, they love athletics around here. They love their sports. The city loves football, as you see with what the Bengals are doing and having a great year so far, too. And we're just kind of jumping on board and kind of jumping with all that momentum and trying to carry it on.
All right. So it seems to me whenever somebody gets an opportunity like the one you have right there, there's going to be an opportunity to build and develop a culture because what was happening before you probably was not working as well. In terms of building your own culture, what kind of attributes are you looking for in a winning culture?
Well, I think that, you know, the culture is such the buzzword nowadays.
Right.
You know, it is. I mean, I think the last 5 or 6 years. But it's true. It's what you really have. I think the things that are inside your locker room, the things that are inside your program, are a great reflection of what you see on Saturdays or whenever you play. And I think that's the thing that, are we a lot better team? Are we a lot better athletically in a year and a half? Did we help develop some guys and become better football players? Yeah, here and there. But I think that feeling, that pride, that sense of pride, that, you know, that brotherhood that you love about athletics and especially about football has really grown and give us an opportunity to be where we are right now.
You know, it's such a good point, Luke. It is such a buzz term. Everybody talks about culture, but like what is it? Are you looking to instill, is it discipline? Is it will? Is it heart? Is it desire? Is it having the other guy's back? Is it all those things? I mean, what is culture?
It really is. I mean, if you came in our room, you'd see that it from the get-go, it says unit strength, so those guys bonding together. It says effort and attitude, which is 4 to 6, A to B, and then it says competitive spirit. That's the culture of what you are. But the reality is it's what you put on film. And we want to be tough. We want to be nasty. We want to be hard-nosed. Those are the things that, you know, you can recruit to, but also that you can help develop. And, you know, they all go kind of along with the ability for guys to love what it is they're doing and their teammates. And I think that's what we overlooked last year, you know, coming in here saying, hey, we got to be tough. We got to do this. when in reality it's hard to do that on a consistent basis when guys don't know and care for one another as much as they need to.
Luke Fickell joining us. You know, to fully appreciate that, then last year you go 4-8 in your first year, which is probably not what you were looking to do from a record standpoint. But after that year was over and you look back, were you able to see growth and improvement aside from that record? Did you get the sense that something was building here?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was more in the off season. You know, if you really look back at it, Jim, to be honest, we won 4 games and we were 3 plays away from winning 1 game. Hmm. You know, a lot of people say, oh, we were 3 plays away from winning 7 games. No, we were 3 plays away from winning 1 game. And yes, there was a lot of things we had to probably go through, a lot of other, but I think the real growth became really in January, February, and March when we kind of recognized the things that we were lacking, and it wasn't speed and it wasn't athleticism. It was, you know, things that come within your locker room.
Luke Fickell is my guest. You know, earlier this season, you were facing Ohio. You fall behind 21-0 in that game. You come all the way back. You win that 34-30, thanks in part to a large pick that sealed it. Is that a game that you win last year? And what's it say about your club that you're winning it this year?
Not even close. Mm-hmm. I mean, at halftime, there was not a – we were at that point 24-3, whatever it was. We were at that point a lot last year. And in that locker room, you know, you could sense that there, oh, my goodness, I don't know what's going to happen when we go back out there. It was completely different at halftime of the Ohio game. And we should have been ahead. We should have played better. We didn't. But you saw maturity. You saw guys step up. You saw guys, you know, handle some of that adversity in those tough situations. And they didn't bat an eye at it. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with you won a few games. You had had some confidence. You'd built some confidence. They had built some confidence. And then they went out and proved it. So there's no way we'd have won that game last year, I can assure you.
Cincinnati 6-0, they're ranked number 25 right now. You know, Luke, in January, I had Orlando Pace on the show, and your name came up as we talked about his Ohio State days. As a defensive lineman, what was it like going up against Pace in practice?
It's not much fun. I mean, I didn't have to go against him nearly as much, so my college roommate and best friend, Mike Vrabel, who obviously is the head coach of the Titans, he was the defensive end, so he had to go up against him all the time. And I can tell you this, that I don't think he ever once beat him in a pass rush in our 3 years together with him. So the good thing about Orlando is he was such a great guy. He could embarrass me and just hold me there and chuckle, as opposed to a guy like Corey Stringer that would try to hurt you. So a great guy.
Look, so when you talk about Vrabel, knowing Vrabel the way we know Vrabel, as competitive as he is, as hard-nosed as he is, as tough as he was, the fact that he couldn't beat Pace ever, what did that do to him? How did he respond to that?
He has enough confidence. It didn't bother him too much.
Right.
I think him not being able to beat me, you know, in their wrestling matches later at night, I think is what bothered him more. So he took his lumps. I know we made him who he is and helped him get to where he is. Let's just say that.
Did he thank you for that? Because he's doing pretty damn well right now.
No, you know what? That's right. I'm going to have to call him tonight. Yeah, I don't think he's ever thanked me for that.
Yeah, right. And once you do, tell him I've been looking for him all year and I can't turn him around either. Really quick, the laws of physics are supposed to be that the low man wins. So when you got low and you tried to beat Pace, what happened?
You know what? That's exactly – I'm a science major. It's exactly what I said to my old coach. I said, Coach, we're doing a board drill. I said, you told me, and everybody tells me, the laws of physics say low man wins. He said, son, genetics overtake that. Thank you, Coach. That's all I needed.
That's great. All right, so last stop. Before you came to Cincinnati, you played, of course, at Ohio State. You were a graduate assistant there. Aside from a stint at Akron, you were at Ohio State pretty much your entire coaching career. You had great success there. It would have been a safe and comfortable place for you to stay. What attracted you to Cincinnati?
Really, I mean, you know, the 21 years, I would say, there. The 1 year that was, you know, unique and taken over in between Coach Tress and Coach Meyer, you know, you kind of had that passion to do that, and you thought you had that passion to be a head coach. And then after that 7-8 months, it was like, you know what, I don't know that I have a passion to do that. You know, and I know it was a unique situation, and it was a really tough time. And I'm not saying the game of football, I'm not saying the record, I just mean in general. So it took my passion away from, you know, running a program and trying to set your own culture and do those kinds of things. And it wasn't until, I think, the spring before I got this job. I was just found yourself, your passion changed a little bit. You find yourself reading different books. You find yourself going to places to study, and you're asking questions to the head coach more about culture and development of things, as opposed to defensively, what am I going to do to stop this, and what's a new blitz, and what's a new pressure. And I just kind of took that time to realize, you know what, my passion has changed. My passion is about going and doing this and having this opportunity to develop some things. And God bless it. And 6 months later, that there was this was an opportunity, and it's just been a great thing ever since.
Hey, Luke, last thing, what kind of books? What kind of books were you reading when your passion flipped? What kind of books were you reading? Who did you read?
You know what? I don't know that there was any. It was just about leadership. It became books about leadership as opposed to, you know, an autobiography of Brian Bosworth, or just, you know, or just you start to see those things about growth and culture and, you know, the you know, leaders eat last. Just those type of leadership books, the John Maxwell's of the world. You're like, you know what? Those things didn't interest me nearly as much before. And then all of a sudden you realize, wow, this is what's really kind of got my interest. And, you know, and that's what kind of sparked the passion to say, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I got to prepare. And I think that's the biggest change, is your ability to say, everybody can say they want to do it, but then who's going to go prepare to do it? And when I finally stepped back and went and prepared in the off season for when this opportunity was going to come, it kind of told me and myself that, hey, this is what you really want to do.
Look, I'm trying to let you go, but last thought then, how did you prepare? What did you do? Did you reinvent yourself, or did you reimagine how you saw things? What did you do?
I mean, it's putting your thoughts into paper. You know, it's actually having yourself a plan, a book, to say, okay, you know, you go for an interview. This is who I am. This is what I want to do. I've thought it out. I thought about how I would hire people. I've thought about what I want to implement. I've thought about the kind of culture and the things that I want to do as a program and as a team. And you can articulate it, because anybody can kind of babble it. You know, and you could say, yeah, I got these ideas, and you're driving and you're thinking about them. But if you take the time to actually put them down on paper, it's kind of like goals. You know, everybody's got goals in their head, but if you actually take time to put them down on paper and look at them every single day, now you become more accountable to them. And I think that's, for me, what it did, is the ability to not just think about it, but articulate it, put it on the paper. This is who I want to be. This is what I want to do, you know, and then it becomes yours. And then I became even more accountable to doing it and having this opportunity.
It's working. 6-0, number 25 in the polls, and Cincinnati's at Temple on October 20th. Luke Fickell, my guest. Luke, so good to have you on the show. Really appreciate the conversation. Hope you can do it again soon.
Jim, I appreciate it, man. If we keep winning.
You got it. Love to have you back, Coach. Nice job. Really nice to have you on. Pick them up, Adam. Take me through the morning. You wake up at what time in the morning?
I wake up at 4 in the morning. Yeah, 4 in the morning.
4 in the morning.
Yep.
All right, so tweet deck, have fun with that. You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you come out to your car. Lay it out for me. Like, where is your car?
Sure.
What happened?
Yeah, so I have an assigned spot at this community that I just moved to recently, and there were neighbors moving in. They wanted to use my spot to make the load in easy. I said, sure, no problem. So I went and put my car on the street for the night. It's not too far away. Didn't really care. And then, you know, they were done with the spot around 5 o'clock, and my wife said, hey, you can go put your car back, because she could see out the window that my spot was open. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. You know, I was comfortable. I was in my loungewear. I was done for the night. I was done doing stuff for the night. So I was like, I'll walk tomorrow.
You were done walking 5 steps outside to move your car to where it belonged?
Oh,
you were done with that?
It was like 50 yards. And
it was 5 o'clock at night, dude?
Yeah.
You in your pajamas? Do you go to bed at 5:15?
No, but, you know, you do the basketball shorts and the t-shirt, and you're done for the night. You're done doing stuff for the night.
Done with what, Hawk? You couldn't walk outside with a pair of flip-flops and move that car?
I didn't want to, so I told her, it's no problem. I'll walk to it in the morning. So okay. I wake up, and I walk to where I had left it, and let it be known, I checked the signs when I parked it there, because I'd never parked it there before. There were no tow signs. There was no don't park here street cleaning signs, none of that. So I walked to my car, and
at 4:45 in the morning, maybe?
At 4:45 in the morning, and it's not there. It's gone. It's completely...
How'd that feel?
It felt horrible. Like, my stomach sank, and I'm looking around. My car is gone, and I'm walking up and down the block trying to remember, like, okay, did I really park it here? Having one of those moments.
What? Seriously, I'm not being facetious. What's the blue book value on that car? What's the street value of a Camry with 250 GER on it?
The condition that this one is in, the wipers don't work, the passenger windows don't roll down, and when you turn down the tape player, it actually turns the volume up. This is probably worth $250 bucks, maybe, for parts.
Is there air conditioning in this car?
It doesn't work.
Dude, how are you still alive? The windows do not go down, and there's no air.
Yeah, luckily I have a very, very short drive.
Okay.
So
now you have no drive.
Yeah. So anyway, I freak out. I'm looking, I'm reading the signs, and I call. I don't make any calls, except I come back and I wake my wife up at 4:45.
I was just going to say, when you woke the wife up at 4:45 and said, honey, the car's gone, What did she say?
She was not very happy. And I was, I texted her. I said, my car is either stolen or towed. And she just wrote OMG. And then I came back and she
texted her.
Well, because I was at my car. She was in the apartment. She woke up.
You guys don't go do not disturb on your phones. Who gets a text?
She's got her phone on, so she handed,
you know, she's married to a moron, and she's come to expect these emails.
Right, 24/7 emergency okay. line. So she hands me her keys, very disapproving look. I go and I drive her car to work. I see Keith, and he's like, "What's up, dude? Why are you late?" And I'm like, "Well, I can't find my car." And he's like, "You should call the cops right now, dude. That's what you do in these situations." So I called the cops, and I said, "I need to report a stolen vehicle." And they said, "What's the license plate? What's the VIN?" And they took it, and they said, "We'll call you back." And they just called
and
back.
And they just called back.
Yep.
Okay, so let's just stop right there for a minute. You've lost the car. It was not in a no-tow zone. And we spent the better part of the morning trying to figure out who the hell would want a car that was 2001, 250,000 miles on it. The windows do not go down. There is no air conditioning. It's got bird crap everywhere. I mean, this is an embarrassing rig.
Yes.
But I respect that you're frugal and that you've been very resourceful and responsible with your money. So I had to respect it. But somebody ripped this car. The cops found it.
Yeah,
the
they
cops
did.
Found it.
Yep.
Was it up on blocks? Were the wheels gone? Did they want the rims? What happened? What kind of stereo do you got in that car?
It's the stock one from 2001. They hooked it up and yanked it to the yard, and they did that because they told me my tabs have been expired for a year and a half, and that's what happens when you
Hawk.
Don't pay for your tabs.
Hawk. You hadn't registered that car in a year and a half. You had no registration on that car for a year and a half.
The specifics are I had not smogged it in a year and a half, so I can't pass a smog test. And if you can't pass a smog test, you can't get new stickers. So I haven't had new stickers since the middle of 2016. And the one time that I park outside the gate where the cops could see it, they yanked it. And it's gone. It's in the yard. It's going to cost $500 to get out, but they won't let me get it until I go to the DMV and get a permission to move permit.
Man, you are dumb. You are a really dumb guy. Why did you not smog this car?
It just won't pass, and whether you pass or fail the test.
It won't pass, or you don't want to pay for having to do what it would take for the car to pass.
Both. I would have to, you know, kind of put a new engine in or whatever, and you have to pay for the test whether you fail or not. So I didn't want to just keep dumping money into a test that I couldn't pay for. So the whole thought process was, I'll ride this out to
Dude,
the end
I
of the year.
I pay you pretty well. I think you could probably pay for that.
This is not an indictment on you or this job. It is on me, because the game plan was
100%.
Okay, so the game plan was, let's make it to the end of the year. We'll get a new car. We got another kid coming. You know, it's time to upgrade, get the small SUV. Let me just get to the end of the year. And she's been saying this whole time, please take care of this, pay your registration. You can't take this car anywhere with expired tabs. You're going to get pulled over. And we're in October. I'm 2 months away. I'm 8 weeks away from this plan working out. And now I got to go fish it out of the yard for $500 and go to the DMV.
You rolled the dice and you crapped out. So what's it going to cost? $5 to get that piece of crap back.
And it's not even worth that.
As no, I'll bet you said, it's not. I'll bet you that car is not worth what it's going to cost you to get it out of impound, much less what's it going to cost to get it right. What are you going to have to pay to get that thing right and up to spec?
I don't know, because like a new engine's a couple $1,000, labor, all that stuff. I have no idea how it's going to pass the smog test. And as Alvin said, when I just told him they found the car, he said, you almost wish it was stolen. And I do.
Of course you do. But who would steal that car, dude?
I don't know. But
yeah, I wish I was 6 inches taller and a lot faster and a lot stronger. You know, I wish that car was stolen. Right, Hawk? I'm sure you do. Dummy, you wish that car was stolen. Nobody's going to steal that car.
Yeah, so now after this, I got to go to the DMV.
You've done a lot of
yard.
Dumb things since you started here, but this might be the all-timer. And now you're going to miss work because you have to handle this. You know, I feel good about that, Hawk.
I know. I'll hang out.
I'll take care of it. I got it. What time are you leaving, Hawk?
When the job is done.
What time are you leaving, Hawk?
Trust me, I would rather be here than the DMV.
I don't care where you'd rather be, Hawk. I know where you're going to be. What time are you leaving the building today?
12:01.
12:01. What time do you normally leave?
3:00.
Right. Good job, Hawk. Really well. Good job. Good effort, Hawk. Good job. Good effort.
Let it be known, my wife, who told me to move the car last night, is
shut up, Hawk.
Not happy.
And of course she's not happy, man. ZipRecruiter.com, Hawk. Try it for free right now. It's a great service. You need it. What a story. A year and a half with expired plates? But he had a plan. Go get to the end of the year and get a new car. Boy, Hawk, I'll give you this. I will give you this, Hawk. You've done some good things for this show. In terms of team content, between you slapping that cat on your arm, SoCal Jeff tweets, oh man, this is great. This happened to me years ago. He won't be able to get the car out until he gets tags. He can't get tags without a smog test. He can't get a smog test without a car. So good. Circle of death. Quickly, Rick in Buffalo. He's ready to roll. Rick, what's going on?
Thanks for picking me up, Jim. Now I'm still burning up about that bonehead Aaron Boone screwing baseball fans out of a Game 5 at Fenway tonight. Any good manager learns from his mistakes. This idiot keeps making the same friggin' ones. And Brian Cashman's no friggin' better. What's this moron do for an encore to that idiotic A-Rod contract? He trades for that choker Stanton, who pretty much has the exact same deal. Time to clean house, sons of Steinbrenner. But you guys are too dense to figure it out. Now I realize I'm punching down here, Jim, but Stale in Vegas could use the beating. Cal's your prototypical a-hole who thinks he made it in life because he moved to Vegas. He's too stupid to realize the only people who live in Vegas are the ones who failed everywhere else. And while Vegas is a great place to visit, it's an absolute dump to live in. So keep pushing those casino brooms and mopping those casino floors, Kelvin. And you can bet your sorry existence, when I make my annual trip to Vegas next spring, I'm going to hunt you down and kick your ass. And one more thing, Jim. I've had just about enough of this Tyler and Shredmonton routine. The only thing shredded about this D-bag is his smack-off credibility. This nobody couldn't crack the top 10 if there were only 9 in the field. So while you're smoking your moose meat and crapping on the big stage, I'll be crushing my chicken wings and feasting on the inferior Canadian competition. War the Goo Goo Dolls. Unwar the tragically hip. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
God, this guy's the best. Rack him. That was worth it. This is why I do that. That's why I would double back and reset and get him on the air. War the Goo Goo Dolls. I want to find out what this guy's all about today. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Jimmy. I was just at the Apple store upgrading to the new iPhone XS, and they told me they got rid of the dongle. First, they ripped the headphone jack. Now I'm supposed to operate without my dongle. Signed, Thick Foles.
Ah! That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Good night now!